it's time for another episode of Drew Drogi's Minor Revelations. Hello, I just kind of stuttered on my own name. When I do that sometimes, I have an alliterative name, Drew Drogi, and sometimes it's hard to come out. I don't know, maybe I'm just feeling really vulnerable right now, you guys. I don't know. I'm sitting alone in a booth and here we are. I am doing a really fun play right now. If you're in LA, it's going to run through at least to the end of March. It's called Die Mommy Die, and it's Charles Bush. If you're familiar with, I've talked about him before on this, and who I love him dearly. He's written a bunch of plays, and he's usually the star of his plays first, and he always writes himself as the heroine. It's always a woman in peril, some sort of tragic, hilarious hero, lady. And, he is obsessed with movies of the 40s, 50s, 60s. And so they all are they are homages to these. They're not parodies at all because he loves them so much. So this is called Die Mommy Die. It's set in 1967, and it's about this this singer who all of a sudden has no talent, so she's retired from the business, and everybody wants to kill her. Everybody's fucking each other. It's just high camp. It's ridiculous, stupid fun. I promise they didn't even ask me to talk about this on my show, but I want to talk about it because it's been a blast. It's so hard. I am beating myself up every night. Literally, I stabbed my thumb, drew blood on the first show. I banged my ankle into a door while I was trying to slam it and trying to look so cool. And, my body is, rejecting me hardcore. And I'm learning how to run in furiously high heels. And a lot of screaming, a lot of slapping, physical violence, making out. It's everything. And it's really fun. And it's running at the Celebration Theater on the weekends, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, and then Sundays at 2. You can go on celebrationtheater.com and check it out. But another reason why I'm bringing this up is that it sort of brings up a lot for me because this is it's a throwback to old movies and horror movies. And growing up, I was obsessed with horror movies. And I loved Freddy and Jason. I can tell you pretty much a lot. I have a deep nerd knowledge about Freddy Krueger and Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers and all of that world of 80s horror. But my mom recognized my love of horror movies, and she was always of the belief, like, if I'm going to watch horror movies, I need to watch some good ones too. And I'll argue that a lot of the, especially in the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, I think are actually really good movies. In the 80s, they were not considered good. They all were considered trash. But my mom made me watch a lot of Hitchcock, and I watched a lot of Hitchcock movies with her, and I love them so much. I think Rear Window as a child was the one that truly terrified me. The fact that you could look across your apartment complex and see Raymond Burr murder his wife, and you have a broken leg, and it's just minutes before he's going to come and take you down. And there was an Alfred Hitchcock Presents episode with these nurses, and they were like, and one of them was actually a man in drag, and he was killing the other nurses, and it was like there was a rainstorm. Anyone remember this? It was terrifying. Also, my mom like made me watch Play Misty for me, which is, I will argue, next to Unforgiven, Clint Eastwood's best film. It's incredible, and that's not hard to find. Not hard to dig through because he's made a lot of crap, but Clint Eastwood is amazing in the movie, and he directed the movie, and it's Jessica Walter, who you know is Lucille Bluth from Arrested Development. Jessica Walter plays this crazy woman, and she's obsessed with Clint Eastwood. He's a DJ, and it's so 70s sexy, and she's terrifying. And, I loved these crazy movies that were from another era. Another one that my mom introduced me to was That Touch of Mink. Rock Hudson? Was it Cary Grant or Rock Hudson? I'm a terrible person. Oh God, I'm an idiot. I didn't look this up. Definitely Doris Day. And my favorite was The Carol Burnett Show. I loved that. And I feel like this play encapsulates all of those things, all of those lovely things in me. And so I've gotten to know Charles Bush over the years. And so I asked him for advice on the role, and he gave me some movies to watch because he's like, these are very much based on this. And so one of them is Dead Ringer with Bette Davis, and it's incredible, and she plays twins, and it's so good and so much fun, and it's just, it's a delight. And then another one is called The Big Cube, starring Lana Turner, and it's horrible. It is so bad. It's like a woman who goes on an acid trip, which is very much in this play that I'm doing as well. But Lana Turner is like dead inside. She's got nothing going on. She's clearly never done drugs. She's never had a beer. Lana is just so lily. And it's awful. And it just got me to thinking, you know, not everything is gold because it's old. You know, a lot of old things are terrible. And a lot of, like, things that we hold up as iconic are maybe not as great as we think. Here's something, and I've probably hinted at it before, and I've said it before, and I love to make people just furious when I say this. But I did not love Lucy. I thought Lucille Ball was terrible. I'm sorry. I get it. She's this icon, whatever. I always thought she was this mock alien clown. I think she has, she talk about dead eyes. She has a contrived mouth. None of it's real. Her crying. No, you're not crying. Stop making a dumb face and making dumb noises come out of it. Everything feels vain in how deliberately it's served by her. I really do think that. I just don't have any connection to her. I don't ever believe that she was a human being. Later in life, there's a truly terrifying clip on YouTube of her showing up drunk and bitter in feathers on Dick Cavett's show. And you see this joyless, whiskered screech owl at her truest, just miserably and cynically complaining about how young actors refuse to listen. It's the most bitter thing you'll ever see. And she has no love for what she does or for who she is. It's really, truly a sad cautionary tale. So, Okay, not to turn this into an Adele versus Beyonce, gay dude pitting woman versus woman. Too late. I hate how much we scream at each other about which woman is better than this other woman. But to offer a counterpoint, why I love Carol Burnett so much, and why I just will argue Carol Burnett is the queen of comedy, because there's this warmth. There's a humanity. There's a truth that to her hilarity. There is an understanding of people and what makes us all ridiculous. Like, Carol Burnett gets the ridiculous thread of honesty, and she blows that up in a beautiful way. We've all met and had to deal with our own Mrs. Wiggins. Our worst relative that we cannot wait to see at reunions is our own personal Eunice. If you haven't seen a very underrated Robert Altman film called A Wedding, you've got to. You must. She plays this character named Tulip Brenner. Tulip Brenner. And she is every horrible yet heartbreaking real mother of the betrothed. Like, she's amazing in this movie. And, you know, when she and Tim Conway and Harvey Korman crack up, it's so incredibly honest. There's a reason why people still reference, you know, when people break up on stage and start laughing, corpse, as you might call it, if you're a theater person. When that happens, when people just uncontrollably start laughing, everyone references Carol Burnett. And the reason I think why is because it's honest. They're fighting the laughter so hard. They don't want to laugh. They want to be so good in this moment, in this scene, and they lose it. And they genuinely love each other. It's so beautiful to watch. And the reason why I don't think it works, I'm sorry, when Jimmy Fallon does it, is because I feel like when Jimmy Fallon does it, it's like, it's so insecure. It's so empty. It's like, I don't have anything going on here, so I'm just going to crack up and hope to be forgiven. And I don't respect that at all. I don't like that sort of, I'm just going to be cute and laugh at myself. But that's what, there is a real difference to me between those two moments and those two energies. And to bring up my play again, last night in our show, we have all props that are two period, which are amazing. Michael O'Hara has done our props for the show, and he's done an amazing job. So we have these real lighters from the 60s to light our cigarettes, and they never work, and they are the bane of our existence. And every night we're praying that these lighters are going to work. We pray, and because it's all timing, and it's a crisp, brilliantly written show that has to go bing, bang, bing, bang, bing, and there's no room for a lighter not to work. Well, last night, the lighter did not work, and the lovely and hilarious Gina Torricella, who is playing Bootsy the maid in our show, I'm not giving anything away, but we basically had a moment with a lighter in which I just, and I'm a horrible woman in this play, and I'm so mean to the maid, to the help, and she couldn't get this lighter lit. Not her fault, the fault of a 1967 lighter. And I looked at her and I said, "You really are worthless." And we both laughed so hard because we don't improvise in this play. I needed to cover the moment. I didn't know what was coming out. We lost it, and the audience lost it as well. We couldn't get it back. We were trying so hard. It was like, please, God, get the wheels back on the train. Let's get it moving. And it felt like our own Carol Burnett moment where we were just like, oh, my God. And, you know, and hey, look, if we tried the same bit tonight, we tried to do the same thing tonight. I have a show tonight. If we tried to recreate that, it would not feel like Carol Burnett. It wouldn't. We couldn't recreate that. So I just want to, you know, say Carol Burnett will always be my guiding light. Every time I see her or feel her, I think I'm so glad we had this time together. Oh my God, I'm sitting here with Fortune Feimster and Ian Gary.
Hi, buddy.
Hi. How's it going? We all talked to each other like we were puppies.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, puppy.
Hi, puppy.
Look at that buddy.
Oh. It's been too long. We were just talking about how we never see each other. Mm-hmm. Ian, you and I are neighbors.
Yeah, literally two blocks.
Yes. Oh, really?
Yeah. I picked him up drove him over here.
Oh,
and then
what a bonding experience!
It was a real bonding.
Sometimes
experience.
Sometimes I do drive past down our street, and I will see you walking sometimes.
Oh yeah, I do. I do walk a bunch, and I think when I used to live in Los Feliz, people were like, "I always see you out walking." Like it's so weird in LA to be walking, and I'm like, "I like to walk."
And by the way, baby, with a purpose.
I have really flat feet. Like when I was in high school, I went to a podiatrist and he had never seen such flat feet. They are flops. I mean, they are duck bills.
Oh,
or not duck bills. Duck. What are duck feet?
Duck feet?
Do they have a name?
What are those feet?
Duck flaps?
There is some name.
I would have known in fifth grade. In fifth grade, I would have known that information and I do not know it now.
Duck flaps.
Duck
good.
Flaps.
Yeah.
But if you want pure comedy, watch Drew Drogi get out of a pool and make a footprint because it is a full foot. That's... There's no curve.
But it does look like you're walking with purpose.
But I have this bounce that I've been told all my life, like, you have a very distinctive walk, and I'm humorless about it. I'm like, I know. I'm very aware that's how I walk.
Cool. Glad I brought it up to start the show.
No.
Nice. Cool.
But I realize that a lot of times when I was teaching at the Groundlings and students would bring it up, they would see me walking across and I'm trying to have like authority and be in charge. And I walk across and one of my students is like, "You have a funny walk." I'm like, "Thanks a lot, Caroline. Good luck, you know, everybody up."
Repeat basic.
Exactly. But I love walking. I think it's a very, it's one of the exercises that I actually like doing.
Yeah.
I hate exercise.
I will.
Yeah. I see you walking too.
Sometimes I'm in a wheelchair.
Oh, no. Sometimes. Just for kicks.
My girlfriend moved here from Chicago, and she's just like, "I'm getting fat. I don't walk anywhere." Like, Chicago, she'd walk everywhere. Like,
right.
Even home from a bar for miles, she would walk home. But for some reason, in LA,
isn't that weird?
No one walks
because everybody's so health conscious, and everyone's hiking, and everyone's doing all this stuff. But it has to be such an event,
right?
To walk,
you need to go drive to a mountain.
And for me, like, what I try to do is just kind of be like, okay, when I walk down the street, and it's a bit to, like, walk down to the, like, bank or to, you know,
Rubies and Diamonds.
Rubies and Diamonds.
Coffee shop.
A really good coffee shop. Ian told me about Rubies and Diamonds, and it's a great coffee shop in LA, and it's not douchey.
I've never heard of it.
It sounds super disgusting. Like, it sounds like
Rubies and Diamonds. Yeah,
it's called Rubies and Diamonds.
Yeah, it sounds like the grossest place in the world, but they're really cool there.
It's really great. The nicest people. The coffee's great. It's really affordable. I really enjoy it.
Which
a lot.
Coffee should be affordable?
It
the fact
should
that
be.
It's so expensive.
It's ridiculous.
Crazy.
It's ridiculous. And that we've turned it all into such, like, we're such assholes about our coffee.
I think it should be expensive.
This
Do you
guy.
Want the good stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Then I guess pay for it. I don't know what to fucking tell
okay,
you.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know what to fucking tell you.
But you are very mad about it
in your
elitism. You're very upset. Well, what's going on? What's going on in life? Fortune, talk to me. What are you doing? What are you up to?
I'm on tour.
That's great.
So I'm in a lot of cities.
I'm so glad you're here right now. Are you doing shows in LA right now? Or are you just in between
places?
Yeah,
I'm working on a bunch of new material. So
oh,
I've
great.
I've been like pounding the pavement like I did when I first started stand up.
That's
feels
so
very
great.
Weird.
So are you going in places like unannounced to try so that, you know, so it's not like your fans are going to show up and sort of ruin the magic?
Yeah. I'm like going up at the end of like comedy contest or like,
oh,
you know,
God.
Classes.
Wow. Uh-huh.
It reminds me of when I started, like where you're just like, don't have punchlines, don't have transitions.
Right.
Everyone's just kind of like, you know, looking at you.
Uh-huh.
I had two shows last night. You know, it's brutal. Because you get to a point when you've been headlining a bunch where you're just used to a rhythm and you know when the laughs are coming.
Yeah.
And you're used to that love, because that's when I said earlier, your fans ruin it. But like, you're used to your fans that are like, just laugh because they love you. And they're like, they're gonna be easy.
Yeah.
And when you're trying out new material, you really want that, the purity of somebody who may not know your work or might go, oh, I've seen her on the Mindy Project.
Yeah.
Or they recognize you, but they may not know exactly, you know. And, because I saw Will Ferrell trying out his George W. Bush show.
Oh, really?
At UCB. And they did it unannounced as if it was an improv show.
Yeah.
And instead, they were like, we're not going to do a show. Instead, here's George W. Bush. And,
funny.
Will Ferrell came out and did that show to try it out.
Yeah.
And it
was that,
you know,
your Welcome America?
Uh-huh.
Can I tell you a really crazy aside of that?
Sure.
When I was in Sunday Company, I wrote this George Bush musical sketch. And the literal song was "You're Welcome, America."
What?
And it was this whole big to do, and then like we ran it 1 week, and then like the 10 days later, something like that. I happened to read something about how it was going on HBO, and it was already in development for months.
Sure, of course.
It had just never crossed paths, and it was literally both a George Bush idea called "You're Welcome,
oh,
America."
Oh my God, that's hilarious!
Like crazy,
isn't that weird? It's just like in the ether.
Yeah, it's just
floating those things
somewhere.
Where it's like, you know, they're like, yeah, that's just. You know, also, I mean, you know, hilarious that we were so, you know, upset by him at the time, given what we have going on now.
Yes. I know he seems like a little kitten.
I know. A little quaint little cowboy.
I know. We're like, what a nightmare he was. Wait a minute. He's great. He's like, come back. So yeah. Oh, that's great. That's cool. And then when do you go on the road again?
Pretty much almost every weekend, every other weekend. Like, I leave tomorrow.
Okay.
But it's nice. I usually go Thursday through Sunday.
That's
and
so
come
great.
Home.
That's so nice.
If I had to like go on the road for months at a time, it would not be great.
Oh my God.
It's hard.
This
I can't imagine.
This working girl in
no,
show
I know.
Business.
You are such a hard worker, and you have been doing that forever. And like, we talked about this on the show last week about how like, in our business, we don't really credit hard work. We kind of look down on it in a really creepy way. We're like, oh, you work hard. But it is you know, it's unlike any other job. We all work really hard. And I do think it's like, I used to be so like, that means I'm just not naturally good. Well, we love to spin the tale of like, she landed in town on a Wednesday. By Friday, she was a star, you know, but
rarely happens.
Never happens. You know, but yeah, that's so great. So, yeah. And also I'm loving your ice cream dances.
Thank you.
They are so wonderful. And do yourself a treat for all of Fortune. You do it on Instagram, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Follow Fortune on Instagram, and just, it makes me so happy. It's like, you just can't explain why. You're just watching someone dancing with ice cream.
You can see a lot of them if you look at, under the hashtag ice cream dance.
Okay.
They all have that hashtag.
I love that they have their own hashtag now.
You know? It's really just an excuse to eat ice cream.
It's pretty wonderful. Brilliant. And it's glorious.
I get maybe because times are so crazy right now.
Yeah.
People seem to get a lot of joy out of this very simple,
absolutely,
odd thing.
Are you kidding me? That is what we like. We poo-poo simple so much. I think especially in our world of like, we need to be important. We need to do something. And I am finding myself, I'm watching like dog videos.
Yeah.
I watched a video of a dog like playing poker. Like it was like a man's hands and he was like dealing cards and the dumbest thing ever. And I watched like 5 minutes of it because we need that. We need that reset. We need that.
Yeah.
We need that simplicity.
I watched a guy today holding his baby in a baby carrier and playing the Michael Jackson Beat It.
Uh-huh.
And he's like making his baby's legs dance.
Uh-huh.
Like, and 8 million views.
And you're like, I need this right now. Well, there's also just like pure joy and we need that right now. Mm-hmm. It's like, we're terrified. And I think we need to just, and to not be afraid of just like, I just want to be a kid again. And kids love ice cream. Like we all know it. Like we know that feeling, you know.
I want to feel safe.
I know.
I don't know what you guys are so terrified about. I say give them a chance.
Thank you.
Give them a chance.
And how expensive was your coffee this morning?
It was $19.
Ian, what's going on?
Not a damn thing.
Oh, yeah.
No, I mean, you know, you write stuff. But I feel like that's the thing. You go like, what are you doing? Hey, you know, you're writing things.
Oh, I know.
I'm writing a movie with Drew Talbert.
Oh, that's
who
great.
I adore, and we have a very similar sensibility.
Oh, my God, I love him so much. I love Drew Talbert. He's so brilliant, weird, funny. I was his teacher back in the day. He's somebody that I like to claim because I was like, I taught him. And he was so funny from day one, and I'm so happy for him that he's just fucking still making us laugh and doing this weird shit. I love him. He's great.
He's a nut, and we have a real similar taste in movies and stuff, so we've been working on a feature, and I'm real thrilled about how that's going.
Great. Oh,
Other than that, I'm taking care of my dog. He got his tooth pulled yesterday.
Oh.
Poor buddy.
Oh, baby. Yeah. Why did he have to have his tooth pulled? I don't know.
There's kind of the old cranky guy in me that goes like, why do dogs need to, my dog never got his teeth brushed a day in his life, and he ate food, and then he was 13 and he died. Like, that's kind of how I feel.
Right, right.
But then they were like, he should really have his teeth cleaned, and he has this like pocket back here that we probably should pull this tooth. And I was like, he'd fucking be fine, I feel like, but okay. I live in LA, so I know I have to do this. Well, but he went and he got it pulled, and he's fine now.
My mom and stepdad's little baby dog, I mean, she's just teeny weeny. She was like, she just had really bad breath, and that was it. Like, she was just so sweet and whatever, and they were just always like, she has the worst breath
ever.
They
were like, put her down.
And it's like, put her to sleep. That's our show. Thank you very much. No, but they took her to the vet, and they were like, she needs 9 teeth pulled.
No.
I was like, I didn't know she had 9 teeth, and she's so little and never complained. They were like, she's in severe pain. And her teeth are rotting out of her head, so they had to take 9 teeth out of her head. Isn't that crazy? So, you know, you do that for your dogs. They're your babies.
You know, it's really weird. We also, Jenna and I have a pug, and they're supposed to have terrible teeth.
Uh-huh.
And she has amazing teeth because she, no joke, flosses. I don't want to make this the
Jenna,
dog talk hour.
Jenna flosses?
No.
Or your dog flosses?
Arlene the pug, will literally like rip a toy apart and then take the like strings from it and pull it through. And like, we thought it was just kind of like a dog thing. You know, a dog will just gnaw at something, kind of like bliss out. She pulls it through each. She'll cycle it through.
Oh, that's
she
a good
pulls
dog
it through
right there.
Arlene.
Each tiny little whale tooth.
Oh, my gosh.
My dog can't do anything.
I know. I was going to say, that is like Arlene. We should be scared of Arlene.
She will rise.
Like, she's like online researching,
she's gonna,
you know,
run
dental
the
health.
Country next.
I mean, exactly. I really feel like she's in line to run the country. Why not at this point?
I mean, seriously. All right. So, who wants to tell me a story? I want to hear something from someone. I'm
so
excited.
I can tell a story. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah,
I love it.
So this is confessional.
Oh, yes. Please.
I, So in when I was very young, probably from like 0 to 10, mm-hmm. I was very quiet and very introverted and very sensitive. Mm-hmm. And like mm-hmm. my parents were always like, you're like some kind of indigo child, weird. Like, like I remember my like some cousin of mine or some kid when I was a kid, like, you know, pushed a cat or something like that. And I'm like 6. And I told my uncle, like, he has eyes, but he doesn't see. Like, they were always like, you're intensely sensitive and a little, you're creeping people out a little bit. Or like, I killed
I see dead people.
I know. I
yeah,
love
kind
that.
Of. Like, I think it freaks some people
that.
Out.
He has eyes, but he doesn't see.
Yeah.
That's genius.
And I killed a grasshopper one time and I literally, like, covered it with a tissue and wrote, I'm sorry.
Oh.
Like, insanely sensitive.
Yes, yes.
But so I set that up because I don't know what happened because then from like 12 to 16, uh-huh. I don't know whether it was hormones or what it was or like overcompensating or you're
sure.
like, I can't exist if I'm this sensitive, so I'm going to try it the other way.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I was a fucking prick uh-huh. for like 4 solid years. Like I look
wow.
back on things I did in like middle, like especially high school, I kind of calmed down.
Mm-hmm.
But middle school was it? I literally look at it and go like, I was a different human being.
Mm-hmm.
I identify with this 10-year-old, and then like
right.
17 and on, I don't know who I was for 3 years.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
yeah,
really
yeah.
strange.
Well, I mean, like, I totally can relate to that. I think I was like, first of all, like, it's that time, like,
yeah.
you all are. Like, I remember. I was also a very sensitive, quiet kid. And then I had like that year from hell in seventh grade with my Welcome to the Dollhouse year. And then I learned how to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know like to also be kind. Like I didn't think I could be both. I didn't think I could. I just learned how to make people laugh and I would just be horrible.
Right.
And it was my own insecurity and bullshit coming out. And I was terrible. I always used to say when I would watch those talk shows in the 90s, like when I was in college or high school,
yeah.
you know, and they would bring people back from high school and junior high. They would do that. We'd be like, and I'd be like, I would never go on one of those shows because people from, you know, I was terrible to so many people,
yeah.
you know, that, you know,
oh, really?
I really was. Cause I just knew how to make people laugh and I would, and, if it got a laugh, it didn't matter. Like,
right.
and it took me a while.
Roasting people and talking.
Yeah.
In high school.
And I was just like, anything I could come up with,
mm-hmm.
like anybody was fair game. And I would, and I got really popular that way,
uh-huh.
like in a while, you know, just for being like, just, and it took me a long time to just be like, oh, you need to be like a nice person and you need to treat people how you want to be treated. Like all those things that like I grew up hearing and I used to be, and I was as a child.
Yeah.
I had to like relearn. As I got older and be like, you can be confident and own being a funny person without like
constant viciousness.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And I think some people sadly haven't learned that lesson to this day. I mean,
no.
there are people now that like, and I think we all understand that people come up to us as people who make jokes for a living and they think they're being funny with us and they're really mean,
mm-hmm.
really hateful. I've had people say such horribly mean things to me. And you know, the reality is we're the most sensitive people in the room.
Yeah. So,
and we deflect and we make jokes because we're insecure and all that stuff. And people think that they can be so, they think that they're being with you. And instead you're like, oh, that was really mean. Or they'll be really mean about someone else
mm-hmm.
and thinking that I would love their humor. I'm like, no, man, I don't like that. I don't like mean. But was there something you did specifically that you can remember?
Yeah, in middle school, I was just a prick. I mm-hmm. spit in a kid's face one time.
Oh, my God.
There was routinely a kid, and it was, like, for literally no reason other than, like, this is a mean thing to do to a person. I can get away with this, probably. And so I did. And, like, I still, like, I can picture that moment in my head, and I go, like, you get that, like, electric
yes,
shock through your
yes.
body. You go, like, oh, blah, blah.
I know.
Oh, I want to do that. Or there
right.
was this kid who, I mean, he could not have been more of a stereotypical nerd. He just was a nerd, man. Like out
mm-hmm.
of central casting nerd.
Mm-hmm.
And he would every day go late to lunch because he had to like A-brain his books in his locker and get them just right. So it'd be like, cool to three people want to just like go like beat him up, be a jerk to this kid? You want to do that? Just bully this kid? Do you want to just scar this person for life? We would do it like every day, every single day. Mm. And I look back on those things and I was like, did you? Like, I get that motherly side. Did you enjoy that? You proud of yourself? What possibly was flowing through you at that time? It's like an alien in your like personal biography. You're like, all checks out. What the fuck was that?
Well,
there's this spike.
Have you seen that guy on Facebook? Or
I have. He's not doing well. No.
Oh, no.
No, he seems fine. God. He seems fine.
Yeah.
But like, you just look back at these things are like, oh my God, I slapped my mom once. I did.
When
it
and
happened.
Where? How?
It happened. We got into, my mother and I have some barn burners. Like we
mine and I.
Well,
have,
of course. Sure.
And just so that everybody at home knows I'm a good person, I have my hands on my cheeks in full shame.
He's full of shame
right now.
I can attest. He's a wonderful person.
No, but we get into some barn burners, and it took me a long time. Speaking of what you were saying about like meanness and stuff, it took me a long time and a lot of failed relationships and like interactions with people to realize that I can't have a fight with a person and say the meanest thing and then everything will be fine.
Right.
My family interaction, the interaction with my mom or stuff like that is like, oh, we're fighting? Cool. I'm going to say the meanest thing I can, the most hurtful thing I can. Mm-hmm. And then 10 minutes later, it's like, hey, what do you want for lunch?
Oh,
like,
that's
just,
my family too.
It took me a long time to learn for some people that it's like, I go, well, fucking die, cunt, that they actually take that personally.
My sister-in-laws who didn't grow up with that, when they hear us say these awful things to each other, they like won't talk to the other, you know, the person that said it for like 2 months. And my brother's like, oh, like whatever.
Yeah.
So that was just our dynamic. And
absolutely.
I don't remember what it was, but we got like nose to nose screaming. And I think she might've grabbed my shirt or something like that. And I just went like that. And you were just like,
I know.
You know, and you just go like, God, what a raging.
Did she smack you back?
I think, if I remember correctly, I don't know if this is a separate incident or the same one, she chased me under the table with a broom.
Yes!
Which, I mean, well within her right.
Absolutely.
Well within her right.
I remember I was meeting a friend for lunch a year or two ago, and I saw this woman. And it was with a toddler, so, you know, but the kid was big enough that it caused some damage that he ran out into the street and a car almost hit this kid. And this mother grabs the kid and saves his life, literally saves her child's life.
Yeah.
And he turned around and punched her in the face.
Oh, my God.
And I was just like, I had this moment of like, I do not understand what it's like to be a parent, because I would have thrown that child at the car in that moment out of just, and not because I'd want the child to hurt, but I feel like in just retaliation or in rage, or I'd be like, do you understand? Mm-hmm. I just saved your life and you just, you know, you have no concept of what just happened. And, but it's amazing what parents go through.
I'm telling
but
you.
But I also, I had a father who was very, I mean, like just, it words were we just fights were just could be really intense, especially between my brother and my father, because they would go at each other a lot. And I just had a very witty father, and like, and so and then as someone who like now like has to like improvise for a living, like I don't trust myself in a fight. Like I'm very nervous because I feel I'm afraid of what horrible mean things might come out of my mouth when I don't even mean it all.
Right.
It's just that I want to win the argument because I grew up like with a real like, oh, you can, we're going to go there and we're going to say that and we're going to do it. And so now I feel like I can, I'm so bad with conflict because I just don't, I'm scared of where I'm even coming from, in that situation. I'm really scared of fighting because I'm scared of what I'm going to say.
That's so, we must all have the same background on that. Cause that's like, when I was growing up, it absolutely was cool. Say the meanest thing. Mm-hmm. And then it would like be very hurtful. And then it would like, we would get over it.
Right.
It would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But now, if I get in fights, any kind of like argument thing, it's like, okay, well, I guess we're arguing now.
Uh-huh. So exactly.
I hear what you're saying.
Exactly. I've had to totally like muscle myself into, you know, out of it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's healthy either.
Yeah.
I think there's sometimes you do just need to like blow up and say, and say whatever. And I always admire my friends that are able to just like scream at each other and be over it. But I'm always so scared. And I have to have like a long talk and be like, look, I love you so much and all this bullshit. And I'm like, sometimes it's like, you just want to blow up and be done. I don't know.
I guess it took me a lot of relationships too to figure out how to fight, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And but I guess one thing that was good that came out of it is that if I do have some sort of conflict with someone I'm close to that I really care enough about to fix,
right,
I'll just say it. This is what's bothering me versus sweeping it under the rug, which is nice.
It's great, and you have to. And you have to be willing to be like, okay, what we have is more important and it's going to survive this.
Mm-hmm.
I have to just tell you this. It bothers me, you know, versus the like holding onto it and letting something blow up. And...
Yeah. But I try not to scream anymore.
It's not good for your vocal cord.
I know. It's not.
Growing up, there was lots of that.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing too in our house. Like whoever screamed the loudest wins. Yeah. It's like, it'd be heard, you know? But then I think for me, I would always like retreat, and then I would usually like act out at school a lot more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I realized that like, oh, not everybody else has this sharpness that I can sort of bust out. Like I can just say blah and people are like, oh my God, Drew just said blah, blah, blah. You know, I was also really mean to teachers because I had teachers that I loved, and then I would go into the next teacher's room and just terrorize them. If I didn't respect the teacher, it was my time too. And I did impressions of all of them. It was my first like sort of sense of doing like characters, and I would do impressions of all my teachers and to make my friends laugh. And some of them were just cripplingly mean. I mean, just horrible. And then I would, you know, if it was a teacher I respected, I was such a nerd about them and I would love that person. But like, if it was not, it would be.
Yeah. It's funny though. It's
horrible.
Like, it's not defensible, but I do understand. I think if you are in a school structure and if you're a little bit of an iconoclast, you know,
sure.
What I mean? Like you look at those things and you're just like, oh, you're a doofus. What are you doing here?
Right.
You know what I mean? And I remember that, like having those feelings of like, this person is wildly inept for their position.
Well,
even at a young age, like, why am I?
Yeah. Well, growing up,
I wanted to be
a teacher. I wanted to be an English teacher. And so I went to the school that I went to and, you know, and I thought I was going to be an English professor. And so I had such respect for educators and I thought they were the most important people in the world. And I still do. I still think I'm like, everything you have to do in life, someone has to teach you how to do it and like whatever it is. And so I have no respect for someone who's in a position of authority.
Right.
Who has nothing to teach me. And I think when I was a kid, I'd be like, I'm a fucking kid and you don't know.
Yeah.
Like what you're talking about. Well, you get nothing from me. Like you're only going to get, you know, and because I wasn't the kid that like set trash can fires or like, you know, threw banana peels down or did pranks. I was an emotional terrorist. You know, I mean, I would find out what would drive them over the edge. I had teachers have meltdowns on me in front of the whole class.
Oh, really?
It happened.
Me
oh,
too, yeah.
Oh, it happened numerous times.
Yeah.
When I remember in eighth grade, there was a woman who, she was, she had to teach French and it was like eighth grade. So it was before high school and they like just added a French class and she couldn't speak a word of French.
Mm-hmm.
And she just Xeroxed Barnes and Noble French the easy way, like just shitty books and just like hand. And she would bring a wheelbarrow down to the trailer. We had our class in a trailer because they didn't have enough classrooms. So some of our classes were in trailers. And so she would come to the trailer with this wheelbarrow and just like hand out Xerox and just basically want us to do our work and be quiet and not talk. And I terrorized this woman so much to where because I'd had a French exchange student the summer before and I was eighth grade. I was like coming into my own. I was a horrible human being at that age. And I was like, I know French. I couldn't speak a word of French to this day. But in my mind, I was like, oh, I had an exchange student living in my home for a summer. And this woman doesn't know anything. And so she had a meltdown at one point, and I remember her screaming, I was railroaded into teaching this class. And she like really was like, I don't want to teach this. And told my friend Whitney, she was like, Drew, you have no respect for authority. You have no respect for teachers. And then she was like, Whitney, you support him the most.
You enable him.
She said, you support him the most. And so Whitney, to this day, on my birthday, just sent me a thing. And she was like, from the person who supports you the most. Which is 'cause to this day, we laugh at them. I'm like, what a terrible quality for a friend to support. You know, what she meant was like, so you know, funny, you egg him on.
Because like, it's just such typical teacher speak. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Like anybody who's ever seen a teacher lose it, which I feel like if you went through public education, you've seen that at least once. There's specific phrasing. You know what I mean?
I was railroaded teaching this course.
And I believe her. I guarantee they pulled her name out of a hat. They were like, we're doing French now.
And they were like, all right.
Now as adults, we realize how teachers get paid nothing.
It's kind of a miracle there are any
teachers.
I know. Well, your mom's a teacher, yeah?
She retired. Okay. Yeah, she taught special ed for 30 years.
Wow, that is a very, that's
so
an incredible.
So she would have, like, desks thrown at her and kids would stomp on faces. And,
oh, my God.
She had a huge black guy that was her assistant. He got sent to the hospital.
Oh, my God.
Because she did anywhere from, like, behavior problems, in the hood. She was, like, in the hood for a lot of her time, and then the last like 5 years it was with like mentally disabled kids who didn't have any sort of control over emotions or physicality, and it was dangerous. She finally was like I have to retire.
It's funny, I think people forget that sometimes, especially for schools, they get lumped in with, they have to be like a jack of all trades. Like special education isn't just like mental handicaps and stuff. It's people like, I was in a special education class because they were literally like, this kid needs to calm the fuck down.
Really?
Like that in that middle school period, I got expelled from middle school for fighting and they basically were like, go to summer school. Fuck it. We'll put you in ninth grade. But part of my condition for being in ninth grade was like, you have to be a part of this program where like you're kind of mentored and monitored. Wow. And it was like, it was all a part of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's a far more encompassing, at least in the school district we were in.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's so crazy. Oh my God. But your mom does so many great things too for, you know, she's always in like PFLAG and she's all about.
She's like taking up gay rights as her like.
Which is great.
Thing.
You know, she's, you know.
No, it's awesome.
And she's in Belmont or she's
in? She's in Belmont,
okay.
Yeah.
Fortune and I grew up 15 minutes away from each other in North Carolina.
We didn't know each other. We know that whole area.
Yep. All too well.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's really great. She's doing that.
Well, you know, it's also, I mean, I love that she does it. And she was getting like way even more involved, but to the point where like, she had no life, and I was like, well, make sure, you know.
Right.
I appreciate this.
Right.
But it was also like a little bit of a way not to focus on her stuff.
Of course. So absolutely.
I'm like,
sure.
The gays appreciate you.
Yes.
But they'll appreciate you more if you take care of yourself first.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
And then us, you know.
Yep. Absolutely. It's hard. It's hard to balance that, you know, self-care with like, I have a purpose in the world. What's your story, Fortune?
Oh my gosh, I kept going back and forth about what I wanted to talk about because I feel like my life is, my life up until like the age of 18 versus afterwards are very different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought about, I would talk about where my middle name, Fortune is what I go by.
Mm-hmm.
But where that comes from.
Oh, great. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's, I grew up as my first name, Emily.
Mm-hmm.
Fortune, people think I just kind of made up that name. Like I just, you know, what is a, what's a star's name?
Fortune Feimster. Blasted everywhere.
Yeah. But it started like when I was actually born. My mom went to the hospital, obviously, to give birth to me. And that was back when you had to stay in the hospital for like 5 or 6 days afterwards. And she was told by all the nurses that I would be a boy. Like, they had these, like, little things, like, oh, her heart beats slow, so either, you know, you have a girl or a lazy boy. Or no, they said either you have a boy or a lazy girl. And but she like always felt like she was gonna have a girl. Anyway, as she was going to give birth to me, this African American woman nurse appeared out of nowhere. She'd never seen her before, and she said to my mom as they were wheeling her in, she's like, "I'll see you and your 10-pound yes, that was 10-pound 10-pound baby girl after, you know, your surgery," because she has C-section. And my mom never saw the nurse again for the next 6 days. She asked everybody, like, "Who is this? Who was that nurse?" You know, because I ended up being born 10 pounds. I was a girl.
Right, right.
And it was very much like, it felt like, you know, touched by an angel.
Right,
moment.
Right, right.
Della
right.
Reese came in there.
Maybe and, it was Della Reese. Who knows?
So she was like, always like, that was like the weirdest moment. She was telling my grandmother about that. So my grandmother was like, "Oh, that's such a cool story. You know, we have a lot Fortune, like we have a lot of people in our family with the last name Fortune." And she's like, "That's kind of a cool like thing that happened, and also we have this cool family name, you know, I think that you should name her Fortune." And my mom was like, "No, like she would have to be Miss America to live up to a name like Fortune. I'm not gonna do that to her." And so she named me Emily. And so I didn't know about this. I knew, you know, about my middle name and stuff. I didn't pay any attention to it for many years. And as I got older, my mom told me that my grandmother wanted me to be named Fortune. And I was like, "Oh, that's interesting." And I was just always like super close with my grandmother. Like we just had like this bond that was like nothing I've ever experienced. It was just like a sort of soulmate, in a way. And I followed her around from the time I was born till, you know, till she died. Just like I was her like little mini me. And so we just always had this connection. And she ended up getting sick when I was in high school. She got cancer. And so that summer, she was like, had a brain tumor that went inside of her skull and wrapped around her brain and spinal cord. And like that entire summer, she never once even said, "Ouch." And we learned later, the doctors said that she had a form of cancer. It was very rare. And like the pain that she went through was excruciating. They said it basically pressed down on her head. And God. So she told my mom at the beginning of that summer, she's like, "We're going to see," and she called me Emily, "we're going to see Emily off to college." And they gave my grandmother 2 weeks to live. And my mom was like, "Okay, that's okay. Yeah, yeah, we're going to see her off to college." So for 3 months, that entire summer, she basically every week the hospice nurse would be like, "This is it. You guys got to go say bye to her." And we'd
oh
like,
my gosh.
Oh my God. And like she practically raised me, because my mom, that's a whole other story, but we lived around the corner and she, you know, my mom did the best she could, but my grandmother really filled in. And so this was like losing a mother.
Yes. Yeah.
And so she ended up for 3 months going through this excruciating pain. And I remember it was the morning I was to leave to college. I went and said, you know, my goodbyes. And at this point, she was unconscious, so I didn't know if she could even hear me.
Right.
And so I moved to college. And the next morning, I looked at my watch at 10 a.m. and I felt her die. And I was like, "Holy shit." Like, I called my house because she was staying at in her house, and my dad answered, and literally they just watched it happen. And I was like, "Hey," and he was like, "Can I call you back?" Because he didn't know what to say. And so like she's just always been a part of me. So she ended up dying. And so from then on, from 18 on, for the rest of my life, I was like, or you know, until now, I was like, "Holy crap, this woman made this huge sacrifice for me," where she stayed in pain for 3 months just to see me go on to this next stage of life to have this success. And so I basically, you know, I said in college, was like, if I ever perform, if I ever, because I always wanted to perform, I always wanted to do something, but I didn't really have the courage to do it. And I was just like, you know what, if I ever get that courage that she, instilled any sort of belief in myself, she put that there. I was like, I'm going to go by the name Fortune because she wanted that for me from the time I was born. And so that is how I
come
to go by Fortune. I've been going by it since I was 22.
Oh my God, that's so beautiful.
Did it start when you started performing?
When I started performing,
Wow.
I did, because, no one in college, because, you know, in college I did theater, but it wasn't, I sucked. I was terrible at it. And so, I actually started with my Fortune at 24. It was my first Groundlings class.
Oh,
I did the, practice class. And I remember going in there and be like, I'm going to tell them my name is Fortune and just to see what, what it's like, what it feels like. And there was like 15 people in the class. And at the end of the class, you had to go around the room and say everyone's name, try to remember everyone's name. And no one remembered anyone's name. And all 14 people said Fortune. And I was like, oh, my grandmother was on to something.
It's
a cool name.
It's really cool name.
You know, but it was also my way of paying homage. What is it?
Homage.
To her.
Yeah. That's so great.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And it's so nice that you have reclaimed it and own it. And because, I mean, it's such a magical name. And it's so because it's you and I've known you for so long, it's just part of, I don't really consider it other than you are such a fortune. Like, it so fits you so beautifully.
Yeah, it seems so. I don't feel like an Emily.
Right. I can accept you as Emily, of course.
Yeah.
I would be like, but I just, you're just, you're Fortune to me. And it's like, and it, but I also love that you chose it as opposed to living your whole life with it and sort of having to deal with it.
Because
the eighth grade Drew Drogie and Ian Gary would totally make fun of a kid named Fortune.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Course.
We'd be like, Fortune, that's
it
your name.
It would have been hard.
It would have been a really hard name to grow up with.
And I might have hated it.
Right. Yeah. And I'm saying, so you would have had you may have had some real resentment or whatever, like we all have and can have with our names.
Like, why'd my mom name me after a stripper?
It doesn't feel like that to me, though.
At all.
It doesn't have that vibe of Candy.
No, but,
It's just
a
fun name.
Ian, Candy is my mother's name.
Oh.
I'm not kidding.
Kind of a strippery name. I'm very sorry.
No, it happens every time.
Here's the thing.
And my mother's a stripper. No, well, my mom's name is actually Edwina, but she's gone by Candy all of her life because welcome to the South where nothing makes sense.
Right.
Her maiden name was Crane. And so my grandparents thought it would be so cute to name her Candy Crane. So she was Candy Crane.
Shut up.
On her birth certificate, she's Edwina, but she's never gone by Edwina.
Edwina,
which is my grandmother's name.
Edwina.
And my grandmother goes by Weena.
Weena!
Isn't that, Weena.
Like
it is so Southern, right? And then, so my mother is Edwina, but she's always been Candy. And when you meet her, she's such a Candy. But I get it all the time. When I teach class and people do they'll do hooker characters and they're like, I'm Candy. I'll be like, new choice. That's my mother's name. And people are like, oh my God, I had no idea.
I'll south with you. My mom's name, given name, is Betty Jo Cunningham.
Yes.
And was born, actually, she makes this a point. I was born in Abingdon, Virginia, but she spent a lot of her raising in a town called Possum Holler, Virginia.
No.
Yes.
Wow.
Like, if that was in a movie, you'd be like, come on. Possum Holler.
Possum Holler. And Holler, Holler.
Oh, sure, sure. Like Butcher Holler. Isn't that crazy?
Possum Holler.
Well, we had... because I grew up in Lincolnton, and we had Cat Square, we had Pumpkin Center. Do you remember these places?
No.
Pumpkin Center.
Yeah, there was a place called Pumpkin Center. There was Cat Square, where back in the day, it's where people used to dump their stray cats.
Oh my God.
That's where it was. And they would have, I remember the cats.
Those were the days.
Those were the good old days. Make America great again. We can go dump our cats somewhere. And I remember there was this fair, the Cat Square Parade, and I'm sure it was like four cars and like, but they painted a giant cartoon cat, a cat face on the ground in a square because they're creative. And there were these horses, and I remember these horses were walking, and they would get spooked by that cartoon cat on the ground, and they would be like throwing back and screaming, like they would just could not handle.
Is this
they would
every
not,
year?
Every year,
and
it
yet
would
they
happen.
Would persist and with yet painting like, the cat.
They'd be like, whip them horses through. They got to get through it. And these poor horses would just be like, I'm not walking on that. I feel deeply unsafe for good reason. Also, just the history of, you know, feline genocide that happened in the town. I'm sure what didn't give them good feelings. But what are some, there was.
The South is a weird place.
There's so many places outside of that I remember. There was High Shoals and Buffalo Shoals. Mm-hmm. And
we had a street in Belmont called Barry Cooter.
Barry
Cooter Street.
We had Tick Neck
street
and Hog
at the
Neck.
End of it makes it worse. Barry Cooter Street.
We had Tick Neck and Hog Neck Road.
Oh my God! Was this
and
in
a place called Jumper's Hole
in Baltimore? You're from Baltimore,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, but wow. Maryland is really weird. Like I didn't realize it until I kind of moved out. But like Maryland and Baltimore are really weird because it's like it got split in the Civil War. You know, it's like the Mason-Dixon runs clear through Maryland.
Okay.
So it's like half of, you know, Baltimore and then the northern part of the state was like the Union. And then as you got closer to the border in Maryland, it was the Confederacy.
Okay.
So it's like the literal like American split is right through Maryland. So it's a really weird culture
that I never
realized. Like, The Wire is true, and so is every John Waters movie.
I was going to say, I always think of John Waters,
you know,
every time I hear Baltimore.
And
they're both
accurate. And move out from there, and then it's like rednecks and lacrosse hippies.
Huh.
Like, it's a really weird amalgam.
Yeah.
Like, the dudes, it's always like kind of in a polo, but with a puka shell necklace.
Oh,
and they they're jocks, but their hair's grown out.
Yeah.
So, like, Owen Wilson characters.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, that's so fascinating. Well, that area too, because I've always been Pennsylvania has always been crazy fascinating to me too, because I'm like it really means nothing.
Like the Amish,
it's the Amish, but just like all the different like smash up of the just that part of the country, Delaware, Maryland, like just that area is like it's not really the South, it's not the North,
no,
it's not really, you know.
Yeah. They're just
we don't know
folk.
What it
we don't
is.
Know what they don't know what they are up there.
Know. Maybe that's why I have such an identity crisis. Like, I am because I'm from Maryland.
Anyone north of us, we just call Yankees.
Yankees. So. I know. Isn't that fun? I know. I always loved that. That was such an insult growing up. They're like, ugh, Yankees.
That's what my grandmother would say.
Yeah.
Northern aggressors.
Yeah. My oldest brother was married a woman from Michigan, and she like, oh, she's a Yankee. I'm like, Michigan.
But like, it was such a funny thing that I totally forgot about, like when I went up to college, and then I would come back and they would talk about Yankees and all this stuff, and I'm like, you realize that like the other side doesn't like have this sort of weird place on the right, you know. It's just so funny how like we just still have to have something from the Civil War. Like we have our class or whatever.
Oh, God.
It is.
It's so funny to go home and hear like the old school people talk about the Civil War, and they're like, yeah, they don't talk about how they destroyed all of our, you know, homes and buildings. I'm like, well, they did for a reason.
For good reason.
It was a war.
I know, exactly. Yeah, we grew up and it was like General Sherman was the worst person ever for, you know, burning Atlanta. It was like that he was the worst human being ever. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you know, there were other people who were affected negatively by us. Oh, Lord. I know. It's so ridiculous and funny. And I love going back there and just laughing at it now because it's just, I mean, and I love being from the South. And that's the other thing too, that like I every time I can, I love to tell people I'm from Lincolnton, North Carolina and, you know, and I'm proud of a lot of it. And, but I do think if I went, you know, like, I'm glad I didn't know what I know now. Like, if I had gone back there and tried to live there, I'd be like, there'd be just no way.
Well, ignorance is bliss.
Absolutely.
You know? When you're there, you don't really know. Like, growing up, you're just like, you're not sure of what's outside the bubble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how did you feel about something like the Confederate flag? Was that even on your radar?
It was very much on our radar because in Lincoln County, there were three high schools at the time. I think there may be more than there was Lincolnton High School, there was East Lincoln, and there was West Lincoln. And West Lincoln was the the farthest redneck, and their mascot were the Rebels, and mm-hmm. the Rebel flag was their school
right.
flag.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so it was a huge issue. Like, and I remember, like, at the time, really understanding the argument about, like, well, it's about our history, and it's not about. Like, I really wasn't on the side of, like, taking down the flag, mm-hmm. Which is, I'm very embarrassed by now. Like, I mean, I would, you know, absolutely they need to take it down. And the crazy thing was when Nikki Haley did take down the rebel flag in South Carolina, my mother, who's a Republican, was supportive of taking it down.
Right.
Like, a lot of Republicans were like, it's time to take this down.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that's, I think, interesting, is how people that, like, really supported it having it for, like, you know, and say the Civil War was about states' rights and Southern heritage is more than, you know, just racism, turned around on that flag and said, you know what? It's a yeah. really evil thing. And bad people are using it to do very bad things.
It is
and
fascinating, though. Like, I see both sides of it in a way, because mm-hmm. I do think it's like, I can't understand that things come to represent something else over time.
Right.
And I do think it's funny that we go, like, take down that flag. By the way, here's the American flag. A lot of genocide under this flag, yep. but don't worry about it. Yep. We had the greater idea. I know there was the Trail of Tears, but that's forever
sure.
ago.
Right. Exactly.
So it is kind of funny how relative it is, but mm-hmm. at the same time, it's like it just has a context of, like, I ain't never seen that flown on a truck and gone, like,
I bet
they're open-minded.
Yeah, right.
That's the thing. Because, like, if you know, there's actually a great Southern magazine. I don't know if you know about it. Do you know Garden and Gun, this magazine?
Uh-huh.
I know it's called Garden and Gun, and it sounds like it's going to be the most, you know, redneck anything. But there's, like, great, like, if you really want to know about, like, Southern culture and what's good about, and then there's always, like, a great dog story in there. There's always a great mm-hmm. recipe for old Southern food. There's like a lot of cultural stuff that is in that magazine that you can go, this is actually pretty lovely
right.
and great. And, it's also ridiculously expensive, and it just advertises, it's all about Charleston. It's pretty much just like for just the richest, whitest Southerners.
Yeah.
But, so it's hilarious how it's just, it's, you know, but yeah, like, once something like takes over, it's different. I mean, like, I'm going to way speak out of turn, but like, the swastika was like a Middle Eastern symbol. It was like a
yeah,
it was like a it was a
well, for one, it's a pretty crude symbol. It's like, it's not like it's the most hard thing.
Right.
So it's a Buddhist symbol, it's a Native American
right,
symbol.
Right. So it's been around.
But then yeah,
right.
once right. somebody kind of puts
somebody
a stamp
makes
on it
that you're like, well, let's not do that anymore.
You can't even have that mustache anymore.
I know.
Yeah. That'd be the Charlie Chaplin staple.
It ruined it. It really did.
Now, I am endlessly fascinated by that. The fact that, like, a literal facial mm-hmm. like a facial hair choice mm-hmm. is no longer around, or like mm-hmm. there's no more Hitlers,
right?
Like, that family line is
yep.
just gone.
Yeah. Adolf, like, no one's named Adolf.
No,
yeah. You wouldn't ever name your child Adolf unless you're a terrible white supremacist.
Yeah. Unless you kill millions of people.
Yes.
Right. Exactly. So it's
fascinates
that
me how that's just
it.
Like, people get away from that as far
yeah.
as they
yeah.
can. So that's
absolutely.
Why things like the flag do ultimately make sense.
Absolutely.
You know,
because there
like,
is a, you know, there's also like, it's representative of a lot of things. It's like, you know, you're definitely need to be aware of the bumper stickers that are on your car.
Right.
You know what I mean? And once something, and I think we also need to give ourselves permission to change and to say, oh, I was wrong about that.
Yeah.
You know, because mm-hmm. there's also that. It's like, you know, and I think a lot of people, right now, we were talking about this earlier, like, in how they voted this year, we need to accept them for saying, I voted the wrong way, and that's okay. Like,
and
you
not
know,
and shaming them.
And yeah. not shaming yeah. them and not making them feel like idiots, because, like, I think it's like, you know what? We are fallible human beings. And there are times that, you know, and, yeah, like, if a symbol or a message or, you know, I mean, God, 5 years ago, if somebody said, all lives matter, we would all go, I agree, but now all lives matter means something
yeah.
kind of like
yeah.
shitty. So, cause it's, you know, in retaliation of Black Lives Matter. So, you know, things take form and shape that, you know, that didn't at
and
a certain
point.
And
it takes a certain amount of growth, I think, to like know, cause I used to be a real asshole about this of like, if I know I mean it a certain way, then fuck how you took it. This is how I meant
right.
it. And I'm
right.
explaining that to you. And if it still bothers you, I don't know what to tell you,
mm-hmm.
but you kind of get to a point where you go like, well, no, There is interpretation outside of myself,
right.
And I need
right.
to acknowledge that interpretation and consider it when making certain choices and statements about things.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And absolutely. And when you realize that, like, oh, when I say tranny,
right.
I'm hurting people now. And like, yeah. I was that.
It
that
didn't
had to be,
10 years ago, and that's
okay
that it
had to be explained to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, well, then maybe I won't use that
right,
word
I won't use
anymore.
That term anymore. Yeah.
Because, like, it's, and I can, and I'm still who I am. I'm still a badass,
right.
And I'm still punk rock, and fuck you. I say what I want. Like, that's the other thing, too. Like, we're not badasses. Nobody is. It's like, this whole thing about, like, that's what I meant. If you don't know what I, you
right.
know, it's like, well, you need to maybe be a little bit more of a sensitive person. And when what you're saying and doing is hurting other people, then
yeah.
you absolutely
right.
need to change.
Yes.
What you're saying and doing. Sorry.
I've been trying to sort of adjust my message a little bit since
mm-hmm.
the election.
Because
mm-hmm. I would, you know, before would be like, this is what I think. And if you don't believe it, you know,
right.
fuck off. And now I, once that happened, once he got elected, I was like, oh, there's like a whole other part of the country that believes very different
mm-hmm.
from me.
Absolutely.
And if I'm going to be so set in my opinions and ways, we're never going
right.
to get anywhere. So I've had, even though I'm still strong in convictions,
right.
I try not to put that like, and that's the final thing, you
yeah.
know?
And who is that going to change or
yeah.
affect or whatever in a way? Yeah. And yes, I think it's really important to realize
but
that.
But at the
like,
same time, a well-placed fuck you is also appropriate.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
It
I
really
love
is.
A real way, well-placed
yeah.
fuck you. And some people, you know, need to be told fuck you.
Yeah.
But then a lot of other people just need to be heard and realize that we're like complicated failures, just making mistakes
yeah.
through life.
Well,
and
we
just,
all
you know,
evolve.
Yeah. Let's
Hopefully.
Hope so. Let's hope.
Hopefully.
Well, then we figured it out, guys.
Yeah.
We figured it out. The theme of today is that we all evolve.
You guys, we're all just the best version of ourselves.
I really feel, I feel
that's
rejuvenated.
That's pretty much the theme of this podcast today is that we started out as one thing.
Right.
And
God,
now we're this.
Chrysalises.
We're enlightened.
Butterflies. we were ugly, horrible. What are they? I don't even remember this. Fifth grade. Larva?
Pupa?
Larva?
We made fun of teachers. We had different names. And now look at us.
Look at us.
We smacked our mothers.
Oh, goodness. Gravy. Betty Jo, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Betty Jo.
On that note, I think we are out of time. And I think this is the perfect way to end it on all the things that we've
on
learned.
On us being enlightened.
Enlightened yes. by our slaps, our horribleness, and our... And now we are just going to go out in the world and be good people.
Just be yeah. the best versions of
oh,
ourselves.
Gosh.
We can be.
Namaste.
Namaste. I have a faint little smile on my face that just tells the world I'm doing everything right.
But mm-hmm. if someone says anything about your walk, you will punch
them in the fucking mouth.
You will punch them.
Right in the mouth. All right. Thank you, guys. I want to thank my guests, Ian Gary and Fortune Feimster, for being on the show today. Have a great week, life, year,
all
day, minute. Have a great all
be
of that.
Be the best version
be
of yourself.
Be the best you can be. All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.